He's 45 years old, which proves that police work can't be all that hard on a fellow because he doesn't look it. Graduated from Princeton College before World War II, went on to Harvard Law School. His career there was interrupted for service during World War II. He came out of the service, went back to the law school, and graduated from there, I think, in 1948. Went on to New York City. I guess that was for him back to New York City, where in 1954 he became deputy commissioner of the police department of the city of New York. Captain Hawkinson tells me that that's the second finest police force in the United States. Held that job until 1956 when he resigned, he's asked me to tell you. Practiced law for a while. In 1961, he became Chief Assistant U.S. District Attorney for the Southern District of New York. For those of you who are lawyers, the significance of that particular district is well known. Serving in that office under U.S. District Attorney Morgenthau, and for a time was, in fact, U.S. District Attorney for the District of New York. 1965, some, I think, approximately 7 months ago, he was appointed Commissioner of Police of the City of New York by the, I shouldn't say, I'm happy to say, then Mayor Wagner. To fill an unexpired term of his predecessor, Commissioner Michael J. Murphy, which will expire in February of 66, the job being an appointed one. Now, the commissioner, since taking office, has had to deal with a joint presence in New York of the Pope and the President at one time, and with a general power failure. This means he hasn't been getting this regular amount of sleep. Now, I have personal basis for speaking highly of his force. I happened to be in New York at the time the Pope was there, and he was there, you'll recall, on a, I think it was a Monday. Anyway, it was a fine, bright, sunny day, and I was walking down Park Avenue to 52nd Street. I didn't tell those of you who have been there that I, of course, was on my way to St. Patrick's Cathedral, not to go in, but to look at His Holiness when he got there. I was waiting for the light to change at 52nd and Park, and there were four or five of New York's finest standing shoulder to shoulder and about 5 feet taller than I am. The fellow was coming down the street behind me arguing with his girl. I think it was a girl lady with him anyway. Policeman on the corner turns and says, "Hey, you there arguing with a girl?" He says, "No arguing on Park Avenue with the Pope's in town." "No arguing," he says, "get over on 52nd Street." Well, the fellow took his girl and went over on 52nd Street and continued his argument. I think a man who has a force that has that fine feeling for the distinction between church and state, that fine feeling for the right of free speech in public assembly has done one terrific job, and it's my great pleasure to introduce to you Commissioner Vincent Broderick of the Police Department of the City of New York.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen of the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union, I think before I start my talk, I better clear up one ambiguity that Mr. Dorsey left. There is not, at least we have not determined to date, that there is any connection between the visit of the Pope and the President and the power failure. This is a wonderful opportunity for me, wonderful opportunity to come to Minnesota and to speak to members of the Civil Liberties Union. And for someone in law enforcement, it's rather a rare privilege to be able to talk to people in the civil liberties field. This has been a monologue to this point, it seems to me, running in our direction. uh, We in New York, I think all Minnesota, our thanks for sending us John Pemberton. He is doing a wonderful job in New York, I think a wonderful job for the Civil Liberties Union effort all over the country, and as soon as he gets straightened out on a few details, I think he'll be doing even better. And my basic purpose tonight is to straighten him out on those details. I think that the vice of our age is the stereotype. I think it is a vice that we deal with every day in law enforcement work. And I think it's a vice that you deal with every day in your work. I think it's a vice that we suffer from in law enforcement work. And I think it's a vice that the Civil Liberties Union suffers from. I was very impressed with what was said earlier about the supreme importance of the dignity of the human individual. And I think that when the time comes that we in law enforcement have accepted fully the concept that every man is a human individual endowed not only constitutionally but by God with a human dignity which is entitled to be respected, when that day comes, we will have accomplished a great deal in the direction of providing a more effective law enforcement. Now, I know that the Civil Liberties Union pays lip service to the concept of the dignity of the human individual, but I suggest that there are areas where the Civil Liberties Union itself is guilty of stereotypes. I suggest that the Civil Liberties Union, in thinking of law enforcement, in thinking of people engaged in law enforcement work, tends to think in terms of stereotypes. I think, or I suggest that the civil libertarian forgets that the law enforcement officer is a human individual, that he has human problems, that he is entitled to respect, and that he needs help. And if I accomplish anything tonight, it will be, I hope, to move us a little way towards, if not eliminating these stereotypes, at least realizing that they exist. I intend to be critical of the Civil Liberties Union tonight. I intend to be critical because it seems to me that the best way to be critical is to talk to the people that you're criticizing, and that the best way to air problems is to talk about them. My criticism of the work of the American Civil Liberties Union, and I think probably this is true of all of its branches, is that in many ways it is essentially negative. It leaves voids for somebody else to deal with. And it offers no help in the solution of the problems which exist in those voids. Now let me just give a few examples. We are criticized, and when I say we, I mean law enforcement officers all over the country, for certain law enforcement techniques. We're criticized for, let us say, dragnet arrests, for arresting on a broadcast basis prostitutes who have infested a particular area, or alcoholics who have taken over a park, or drug addicts who have menaced an entire neighborhood. And we are told that the dragnet approach to prostitutes or to alcoholics or to drug addicts violates the civil liberties of those people. Now it does, and I don't differ with that. And I think it is perfectly proper to oppose the practice of using, of making dragnet arrests. But I suggest that there is a whole broad area of civil liberties that the Civil Liberties Union has never dealt with. We must have an ordered society for any civil liberty to have significance. If we don't have social order, we can't possibly enjoy civil liberties, because what we will have will be a situation where the strongest has complete license and the weak have nothing. I am firmly convinced that a properly oriented police department is the strongest bulwark of civil liberties that we have in this country. I am convinced that civil liberties could not exist in New York City to the extent that they do, and they could not be enjoyed to the extent that they are enjoyed, if we did not have a police department which was cognizant of the right of the individual to protest, of the right of the individual to picket, of the right of the individual to make his views known even if they are unpopular views, of the right of the individual to be secure from assault, to be secure from unjustified arrest. I believe that our department is, in many respects and to a considerable extent, civil liberties oriented, in the sense that it does make it possible for our citizens to exercise their constitutional rights. But I also suggest that there are many areas where problems exist which interfere with the exercise by each of us of our civil liberties in New York, and that with respect to those areas, we are getting no help at all from persons active in the civil liberties field. Let me catalog a few of those areas. Let's take first the question of the drug addict. Drug addiction, I think, is not a particular problem in Minnesota or in Minneapolis. It is a tremendous problem in New York City. I couldn't tell you how many drug addicts there are in New York City, but there are a great many. Now, these men are known, men and women, drug addicts, are known as junkies. And there is a tendency, not only among law enforcement people, but among people generally, to think of them not as individuals, but as menaces. And to feel that they are a threat to the peace and security, and something should be done about them. This thinking, it seems to me, is both right and wrong. It is right in the sense that they do represent a threat to the peace of the community, and hence to the exercise of people, by people, of their liberties within the community. But it is wrong in the sense that it denies to these people their essential human dignity. We have not found a solution to the problem of drug addiction. And we have not found yet, in my judgment, an adequate way of dealing with the problem which drug addiction presents. What do we do with the drug addict? Do we arrest him and charge him with a crime? It seems to me that addiction itself is not a crime, yet the addict is a menace. This is an area, it seems to me, which should be of intense interest to the Civil Liberties Union, and of interest to the Civil Liberties Union not simply in terms of protecting the individual drug addict from arrest, but in the interests of protecting the civil liberties of all our citizens by attempting to work out some sensible means of coping with what is in New York a municipal problem today and what might well be a national problem tomorrow. Or again, let's take alcoholism. The alcoholic, again, is an individual, but when people in Washington Square see their park taken over by hundreds of alcoholics who swear at them, who pose a potential threat to their children, they demand police action. Now, what action should be taken? Certainly not a dragnet arrest. Yet these people do interfere with the exercise by the great mass of our citizens of their civil liberties. How shall we handle this? This, it seems to me, is a problem that the Civil Liberties Union should be thinking about and should be helping in the solution of. Let's take the area of pornographic literature. And this is an area where, on one side of the coin, the Civil Liberties Union has been very active. It has been adamant in insisting that principles of free speech and free press preclude effective police action against most types of literature. And as a practical matter, this has created a situation where a police department cannot take action even with respect to hardcore pornography. Now, it may well be that this is good, but it seems to me that we have on every newsstand in New York City, or on most newsstands in New York City, and in many bookstores in New York City, a constant threat to our children, in that there is freely available to them literature which cannot help but be harmful to them. It does seem to me that the Civil Liberties Union has not given consideration, or not given adequate consideration, to the rights of parents to protect their children from harmful literature. It seems to me that some way an accommodation must be worked out between the rights of freedom of speech and freedom in the press and the rights of parents to protect their children. another problem, which it seems to me is one that should be of interest to the Civil Liberties Union, is that of bail and of the various considerations related to bail. Bail is intended to ensure that a man accused of crime will answer to the charges, where the charges are serious. It has been traditional to fix high bail. Where they're not serious, low bail. In either event, the effect has been that the wealthy man has been free on the streets and the poor man has been confined to jail. Now, this is wrong, of course. And there have been some very effective steps taken in recent years in all parts of the country to attempt to redress this situation. In the federal courts today, much greater use is made of release upon recognizance. In New York City, we have the Manhattan Bail Project and the Manhattan Summons Project, where in selected cases, men are released without bail or where summonses are issued in lieu of arrest. And I think that all of this is to the good. But there has been another use that bail has been put to on almost a traditional basis through the years. It has been used to keep people off the streets who pose a threat on the streets. The gangster who can be expected, if released, to dispose of the witnesses against him. He has been kept in jail by high bail. The man who is a potential threat to himself perhaps by suicide, he has been kept in jail by high bail or without bail. It does seem to me that here, too, the Civil Liberties Union should have some interest in working out procedures which will, on the one hand, protect persons accused of crime by making it possible for them to be released without bail, and on the other hand, by developing means by which persons who are threats to society or threats to themselves can be confined through some sensible process and not through the artificial means we use today. Perhaps more basically, I think that the American Civil Liberties Union and its branches should be interested to a much greater extent than it is today in the whole question of social order in a complex urban society. What I am suggesting is that the Civil Liberties Union does very good work in the individual areas that it works in, but then it leaves vast vacuums for other people to deal with. There's a tremendous fount of knowledge within the Civil Liberties Union. There's a tremendous reservoir of goodwill. There is tremendous imagination. And it seems to me at the present time, within the scope of Civil Liberties Union activities, vast areas of the most complex problems of our day are just ignored by the Civil Liberties Union. I have one more area, and this is somewhat unrelated to those I've already discussed, which I would like to speak briefly to you about. And this is the area of crime in urban society. When I was appointed police commissioner in June, I said that I thought the central issue of our times was crime on the streets. Since that time, even before that, but certainly since that time, we have been in the midst of political campaigns in New York. We had an incredible number of men running for mayor this year. We had half a dozen who wanted to be nominated by the Democrats, and we had Mayor-elect Lindsay, and we had the most articulate of all, Mr. Buckley. And then, and perhaps this hasn't reached you out here, but then there was a trail off of three or four other candidates. One thing they had in common was that they all talked about crime. And every one of them had his particular nostrum for the crime situation. More police, the same police better distributed, more modern communication, the computer, more radio cars. There were tremendous number of suggestions made. And we in the police department took each of these suggestions as they came in and filed it in the appropriate place. Because, of course, most of them were suggestions that had been current for years in police circles. And most of them were either in use, and an incredible number of the suggestions were already in use in our department. Others had been tested and were still in an experimental stage. Some had been tested and rejected because there was one problem or another. And a lot of the others were good ideas that cost money. And money is one of the real problems, of course, in running any municipality and in carrying on the law enforcement effort in any municipality. Now, of course, one of those aspirants for mayor has been elected, and we have pulled out from the file the suggestions that he made. And we are reanalyzing them. This is a game, of course, that you never win in. Last Tuesday, we started a program in Midtown Manhattan of assigning motorcycle police officers to enforce the traffic laws and the tollway laws. And the purpose of this was to open up the crosstown streets in Midtown so traffic could pass through. I had lunch today with a prominent Minnesotan who told me that he was in New York last Tuesday and taxi driver shot him across town and nothing flat, and he made some comment about how good it was going across town. The taxi driver explained that this is that man Lindsay. Well, the point of all this is that when I was appointed, regarded crime on the streets as the pressing problem. And crime on the streets was the key issue in our political campaign. And I have only gradually come to realize that what we have done, and this started in 1960 with the presidential election, what we have done has been to resurrect Lincoln Steffens' crime wave. We talk about crime, and we deplore our modern generation, and we worry about our youth, and we wonder why we can't have a policeman who knew everybody on the block like they did 50 years ago and who kept order with a nightstick. And we create a situation which does not exist. But beyond that, we create a fear in our people, which is a crime and a tragedy in itself. We've had in New York a series of events this year which to me are the complete answer to crime on the streets. We had the visit of Pope Paul and of the President on the same day. We had the most massive crowd control problem in the history of our city and probably in the history of any police department in the world. And we found that throughout New York, throughout that day, people behaved with respect and with dignity and with love for their neighbors, and that crime was low. A week ago Tuesday, we had an election in New York after the most bitterly contested campaign of recent years. And all through the city of New York, in the Park Avenue area, in the outer reaches of Queens, in Staten Island, in Bedford-Stuyvesant, in Harlem, people went to the polls. They dealt with an incredible maze of choices. They stood on line for hours, and they behaved with dignity, with respect for each other, and with a sense of their responsibility as citizens. And there was very little crime. Last Tuesday, at 5:27, the lights went out in New York. And those of you who were there know what a frightening thing that is. Those of you who were not there can well imagine. The lights went out throughout New York. The radio went off except for the transistors. There was no television. There was no warning. New York City last Tuesday night was the most wonderful place I've ever been in my life. I mean that. Let me talk first about my own department. The men who were off duty came pouring in. They reported wherever they could report. We sent for them by radio, but we didn't have to because most of them were back already when the radio report went out. Citizens who had no police connections at all got on street corners and started directing traffic. On every corner, you'd see one, two, or three citizens directing traffic, working together, acting like veterans, actually. And this is without any lights, no control. No control except the control of the citizens themselves. Men poured into station houses. Many who had never been in a station house before, asking what they could do to help. People were trapped for hours on subways, and we couldn't get them out earlier because we had to be sure that the power wouldn't suddenly come back on and be a threat to them as they walked through the tracks. But they stayed on the subways calmly. There was no alarm, and there was no bad humor, because here again, they behave with dignity and with respect for each other. And crime on that night, when there wasn't any light throughout the city of New York, was at a low. Normally in a 16-hour period, we will have 380 reported crimes in New York. We had 59 that night. Now I take these incidents and I say that a city that behaves as it did on October 4th when the Pope and the President was there, that behaves as it did last election day, and that behaves as it did when the lights went out, is not a crime-ridden city. But I would go further than that, and I would say that just statistically, the danger in New York on any day of being run over is far greater than the danger of being mugged or raped or shot. Yet I and all of these candidates have been talking about crime and talking about the threat of crime as the imperative of our times. And I think we were wrong. I think that I would like to have the Civil Liberties Union talking about these things. There's another area, and this really is what I'm leading to in this discussion of crime, where I think the Civil Liberties Union must speak out. There are areas of New York today that are dangerous, where there is more crime than there is in other areas. The deprived areas are more dangerous. And it is the people who live in those areas who are the victims of crime. I think that all of the nostrums that were suggested during the political campaign are good. At least some of them are good. I think that we will have to develop, as we are indeed attempting to develop, more modern approaches to the control of the crime we have. But I also think that all of these will be stopgaps, because there is a definite correlation between crime on the one hand and discrimination, inadequate and unequal employment opportunities, poor housing, and poor education on the other. And the most sensitive and affirmative approach which we in complex urban communities can be making to crime is, it seems to me, a massive program that is designed to deal with the inequities that give rise to crime. Now, this is an area where I would think that the Civil Liberties Union should be shouting from the housetops. We are going to see in the coming years more and more dissatisfaction with the anti-poverty program because of its expense. And we have to have some forceful and articulate voices telling us just why and how it is necessary. And here again, I think there's a vital role for you. Well, I've covered, I think, what I wanted to cover. My criticism of the Civil Liberties Union is, as you see, a limited criticism. It's not a criticism of what it has done, but a criticism of what it has not done. I think that it's done great things. I just hope that in the year ahead and in the years ahead, it will move forward into these other areas and do much more. Thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner, thank you very much. Among the liberties we don't believe in is the liberty of equal time. But we've got next year when you won't be here. Thanks again. And that's it. Good night.